The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Martial arts, mixed martial arts. How do we like our martial arts? We like them in Sao Paulo.
Casey, we miss you. We miss you. I don't know. I'm going to get to Casey in a second, but welcome everybody to the UFC Sao Paulo preview show. How do we like our martial arts? We like them two fights less, because that is what has happened to this UFC Sao Paulo card. The scale has taken a couple of the fun fights off this card. Ishmael Bonfim versus Vince Pichel no longer happening. Victor Hugo versus Daniel Santos no longer happening. But the two faces on the screen right there, the main event in the heavyweight division, Jailton Almeida taking on some abs still, Derek Lewis, in the main event of tomorrow's UFC Sao Paulo card. We don't know what the actual lineup's going to be. Maybe we'll find out as we're doing this. But I am Mike Heck, being joined by my fellow New Englander, Mr. Jose Youngs. Jose, how are you?
Life's a blessing.
Well said. And the Prince of Positivity, my best friend, 2 days in a row. He's on BTL yesterday. He's back against today, Mr. Alexander K. Lee. Hi, AK.
I am refreshing UFC.com, ESPN schedule furiously, guys, trying to figure out what this actual card is tomorrow. All we know is we're down to 11 fights, which is actually a pretty good number, but like you said, Mike, we will let people know on the show if the news comes in what the hell they're actually tuning in for on Saturday.
Yeah. Casey goes on vacation last week. All hell breaks loose in the combat sports space with Francis Ngannou. We had to like mimic the opening theme song on the preview show. We had to do it a cappella style. I don't know if you heard that, Casey, but if you didn't, you should probably go back and listen to it. We did the best we could, but let's talk about this card. Jose, we got Jailton Almeida, who... Mm-hmm. And it's nice to have both of you guys here, because AK has been incredibly high on Jailton Almeida, almost the uncrowned champion of this division in some of the conversations that we've had. You, not so much, but the Curtis Blaydes fight, which we were originally going to get, that was going to answer a lot of questions for you. Mm-hmm. Now we get Derek Lewis instead, doing Derek Lewis things, stepping in, trying to save the day, stepping into the tough fight that everyone feels is a tough fight. So I know losing Blaydes stinks, but now Jailton Almeida versus Derek Lewis, your thoughts the day before.
Start with AK. I want to know why he's such a big Jailton Almeida stan. Specifically. Okay. Not just because
AK. Not hard.
Not just not because hard. He's, you know.
He's the best heavyweight in the world today. I don't know what to tell you. The guy is
I understand yeah. We've all been hanging out with Jetta. We can say things that don't mean anything, but like I would like an actual reason rather than like, he's this and that. I'm Jed Meshew. No, I want a reason.
Sheer excellence pouring from his body every time he steps to the scale. Pure excellence just oozing from his pores. Great grappling. Grapples real good, real strong. Like, he has two incredible signature wins. Parker Porter, again, should have rocketed him into the top five heavyweight right away. And he also has a win over the pleasure man, Anton Turkali. That already is a pretty airtight resume. And then, yeah, whatever. He's got some dominant win over a top 10 guy, Jairzinho Rozenstruik. I guess that's impressive. But yeah, I like guys with A-plus skills. I like guys that capture my imagination. I don't know. Could he be more well-rounded? Is it possible he has a poor gas tank? We don't know. We haven't seen him push to his limits yet. That's why I'm a little bummed that we lost out in the Blades fight. That was the perfect fight to test him out. Because if he had lost to Blades, I'd be like, yeah, understandable. Blades, great grappler. Could avoid getting taken down. I think better stand-up than people give him credit for, Blades. He's had some bad moments, but that's because he's learning. He's testing it out, trying to be a well-rounded heavyweight. Good for him. Trying to mix the martial arts. So that was the right test. Now, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen on Saturday if Almeida just runs through Lewis. But I feel like some people on this show, I'm not naming names, won't change their estimation of poor Jailton, no matter how he performs. And I think that's just ridiculous.
Jose, your response?
I mean, it's not really a response. I just genuinely wanted to know. I'm not a detractor of Jailton Almeida. I'm very much he's done about three things.
It sounds like you are. It sounds like you are.
About three things in the UFC, and that's a front kick or front snapping kick into a blast double leg takedown into a submission. Three very, very high level things that you can do against very high level opponents. But, you know, for whatever reason, I don't understand the allure of Parker Porter. I don't understand the allure of the pleasure man. So those wins are, you know, wins. He got two paychecks out of them, but I don't know. Like, he's done three or four things very, very well. I just have questions rather than being a hater. And Jairzinho is not a very good grappler at all. So when Jailton Almeida, you know, watch that fight, double leg takedown in the center of the octagon, a hilarious takedown. If you rewatch that fight, it is a bad takedown that Jairzinho just did not know what to do with. And then Jailton Almeida take it down. Good, like, still got the takedown in the center of the octagon and finished him. I can't even remember how he finished him, TKO, submission, whatever. But yeah, I just have questions about him. And the Curtis Blaydes fight would have answered a ton of those questions, just like the Tom Aspinall fight against Curtis Blaydes would have answered a ton of questions for Tom Aspinall. I have one foot in the door of the Jailton Almeida hype train. I bought a ticket. I'm just waiting to see if there's an easier route to my destination than getting on this train. If he beats Derek Lewis on, who again took this fight on short notice, I would still have the same questions. I guess it would depend. Derek Lewis has arguably one of the best resumes in terms of just level of competition in the entire UFC heavyweight division. This man has fought almost everyone. He's fought very high level grapplers. He's fought very hard hitting fighters, and he's fought very high level strikers. He's won some and he's lost some. I think Derek Lewis is a good litmus test. If this was a full fight camp, again, I wish this was the Curtis Blaydes fight so badly, because I would have had my questions answered. If Jairzinho goes out there and does a snap front kick, double leg submission, I mean, I don't think that gets you a title shot if he does that against Ciryl Gane, who, again, has shown not to have zero takedown defense and zero grappling. Cool. He beat a top five opponent again. I just have a lot of questions. There's just not a lot of fighters in the top five of heavyweight that will give me those questions and answer those questions for me immediately outside of Tom, a matchup against Tom and a matchup against Curtis Blaydes. Maybe Sergey Pavlovich. Maybe, because Jailton's never going to fight John Jones. He's never going to fight Stipe. So those aren't even realms of possibility for me. So I'm not a hater. I just have questions, and I'm not fully on board yet. Looks good getting off the bus, I'll tell you that much. I also wish he stuck around a light heavyweight for a minute, because light heavyweight sure as hell could use the breath of fresh air too. But he keeps winning at heavyweight, just like Kelvin Gastelum kept winning at middleweight. So here we are. Second straight main event. I don't know why the UFC Twitter account keeps saying this is Jailton Almeida's first main event, considering this is his second straight one, but I digress.
Am I the only one? Jose, I'm sure you did an excellent job there breaking all that down. Am I the only one who tuned out after he said the words, "I don't understand the allure of Parker Porter"?
Probably.
You lost me. You lost me. I'm sorry, Jose. I had to do an informal poll in the comments. 100% says you should be banned. You shouldn't be immediately banned for the first time.
Okay, so you could kick me out. I'll go back to drinking my coffee.
Wow, that was
Parker Porter, who's lost to both Taffa brothers and Chris Dawkins.
You can say what you want about Judson Almeida. Poor Parker Porter catching a stray.
He's just a roly poly hobgoblin. That's what he is.
I mean, that's fair.
Great analysis on the watch party when he was on, just knocked out of the park. Let me ask you both this, because you guys bring up a very interesting conversation here. And Jose, I want to start with you, because we have three guys right now. We have three guys right now, one of which you don't have a ton of answers on, but you can, I'm sure you could see how high the ceiling could possibly
be. Sure.
So we have three dudes right now who many consider to be the future of this division. We have Jelton Almeida, and we have the two guys that are fighting for the interim heavyweight title next Saturday at Madison Square Garden, mm-hmm. Tommy Aspinall and Sergey Pavlovich. Rank them 1 to 3, highest ceiling between the three. Who has the most upside between the three of these guys?
Tom, Sergey Pavlovich, Jelton Almeida, I think. But they're very close. I think Tom is the most well-rounded. I think he's the most athletic. He's crazy fast, very good boxing, very good grappling, great takedown defense. Sergey Pavlovich, I don't think we talk enough about his chin. That dude's chin is unreal. It's maybe the hardest in the entire division. There's questions for all three of these men. Like, they just haven't had that. Like, Sergey Pavlovich beating Curtis Blaydes was so impressive to me. That was like, of all, because I think Curtis Blaydes is such a good litmus test because he hits hard, he's a good striker, and he has the grappling to go with it. He's just such a good litmus test. And the fact that Sergey beat him, I think, just is more impressive than any of the wins that Tom has and any of the wins that Jelton has. But I just think Tom has more tools, is more athletic. I just think he has a higher ceiling. Sergey probably 2 and Jelton 3. But it is all very, very close. And all three of these gentlemen will fight each other. Well, two of them are about to fight next week. But all three of these men will fight each other at some point and even throw Cyril Gane in there too.
AK, how do you rank them?
Jelton Almeida. Dylan 4. I have to ride this. I've been on the Jelton thing from the beginning. Again, I think it's the as I always say, tell people, when I see someone with a like one sort of unstoppable skill, I get dazzled. I admittedly get dazzled. And this has happened with many fighters that have not gone on to become champions, by the way. Like someone maybe with like crazy knockout power, or someone like Jelton, someone who has like amazing grappling and submissions. And then once they're taken out of their comfort zone, it's like you kind of see them for what they are, and they go on to either have decent UFC careers or kind of like fizzle out and go nowhere. So I am obviously strongly leaning towards Jelton being one of the special ones. I feel like even if he doesn't round out his game, there's like, and this is a heavyweight thing, right? I mean, we are talking about, you know, one of the lesser skilled divisions with respect to all the heavyweights out there. So I think you can get away with being a little myopic in your strategies, if I could be polite about it. I would put Jelton up there, which is not to say that Sergey and Tom Aspinall don't have standout skills. Sergey, of course, punches like a friggin' truck of the three. I mean, he's probably the most lethal on the feet. And Aspinall's shown punch power, also a really good grappler. I would love to see him fight Almeida someday. I hope that fight happens, whether it's for a title, whether it's maybe both guys coming off a loss. I don't know. Let's say Lewis upsets. I don't even know why I'm bringing this up. Let's say Lewis upsets Almeida. Sergey Pavlovich beats Aspinall. I think Aspinall Almeida would be a really, really, really good fight. But again, I'm going with the guy who I think has the most overwhelming skill of the three. I just can't get over that jiu-jitsu. I think it's so impressive, the finishing ability. I know his resume maybe isn't quite as strong as the other two names. But again, we're talking upside, like who I think has the highest ceiling, then I'll stick with Jelton.
Look, there's a lot. This is a good conversation to have if you're the UFC right now, because the heavyweight division is maybe in like the safest place it's in. Like, it could get real weird with John and Stipe whenever that fight happens. We have a lot of future contenders in Aspinall and Pavlovich and Almeida, and we got others as well. We got the Volkovs and the Tuivasas and sort of the steadfast guys who have been there for quite some time. Derek Lewis is another guy. So, Jose, I know you don't like to play the hypothetical game. You don't like to match make before the fight happens, but most people feel like Jailton Almeida is going to go out there and just do to Derek Lewis what he's done to everybody else. So he spoke to our own Guillermo Cruz, Jailton Almeida, that is, and said that when he wins this fight, he's going to call it Ciryl Gane. Maybe create a little four-man tournament between himself, Gane, and then the two guys fighting for the interim heavyweight title. Do you feel like the best Jailton can gain here outside of a short-notice opportunity at maybe the interim title, if it gets defended, is the Ciryl Gane fight? That's basically the most he can gain from this win? Or do you think even that might be a bridge too far? Beating a guy like Derek Lewis, while impressive, doesn't really answer a lot of your questions.
I mean, that's... if you're talking about what's the highest he could gain, that's very clear. That's about as close as you can get to a title shot and not fight a title is fighting Ciryl Gane. I think, what is he ranked in the UFC rankings? Like at one or two? Like he's in the top two. And well, who's number two? Sergey? And Tom is probably four. Stipe is probably three. So the ceiling would be Ciryl Gane. Outside of a short notice title fight, will they give him that? I don't know. Ciryl Gane's comments after his win against Spivak were a little, I'm not saying off putting, but I was a little frustrated with them, because you know Tom flew there and fight them. I'm like, that's a cool fight. Tom's top five, Ciryl Gane's top three, and Cyril's like, why would I fight backwards? I'm like, well, you're number one. You're not fighting John next, so the only way to fight is backwards. And Ciryl Gane just didn't seem interested in fighting anyone below him, regardless of whether they were in the top five or not. So I don't know if Ciryl Gane will take the Jailton Almeida fight. I could very easily see them giving like him and Alexander Volkov, because that seems like a guy that they want to test young fighters against, like they did that with Tom Aspinall, and you know that hit that win over Alexander Volkov kind of thrust him into the main event scene. I could see them doing it with Tai Tuivasa. I could see them trying to rebook the Curtis Blaydes fight, because Curtis Blaydes is probably still sitting at five or six. I don't know. Maybe they try to rebook that again for the next fight night in Brazil or early next year. Ciryl Gane's the ceiling. I would love to see that fight. I think that's such a fun fight for the division. I just don't know if Ciryl Gane will take the fight based off of previous comments. I wouldn't be surprised if they give him a Volkov or rebook the Blaydes fight.
Yeah, Ciryl Gane is such an interesting piece of this equation here, AK, because look, you and I have talked about how important it is when that microphone's in front of you, and it's not like the end all be all, but you got to have like some sort of plan for your future that is realistic. And we've talked about how there are fighters out there who have dropped the mic in a bad way multiple times. And like Ciryl Gane was just a complete letdown, not just after the win to be back, but in his subsequent after, like even going on the MMA hour, he did nothing. He just basically said like, nope, fighting for the belt, nothing else makes sense, which is just horrible decision making. I don't understand why he would say that. So if Jailton wins here, does he leapfrog Ciryl Gane? Is this like the best he can get? Like, what do you think he gains from a win here? Because we know the UFC kind of views this stuff. If you don't have anything in mind, if you're not really intriguing, if you've gotten your chances and didn't get there, and we have this new fresh coat of paint coming up, maybe we veer to him instead. I don't know. What do you think happens?
Yeah, not being a buzzworthy star and telling the UFC and the matchmakers that you're going to wait for your title opportunity has not worked out great for a lot of people. And I know people like Colby Covington. So I'm like, yeah, he's a buzzworthy guy. He knows his currency with the fan base. Let me put it that way. He knows that there are people that he could sit on the shelf. He could get a title shot, and yes, there'd be a significant portion of the fan base that would complain, but there's also a significant portion of the fan base that like cares about Colby Covington, and it's like, yeah, he's and believes he's done enough to be in that, you know, title contention for as long as he's employed by the UFC. Ciryl Gane is not there yet, despite being a former interim title holder, despite fighting John Jones for a vacant heavyweight title. He's still not there. He's well known, but he hasn't quite done enough that he can just put his name out there and say, hey, the people want to see me fight whoever, like Sergey Pavlovich or Tom Aspinall or whoever has the title, like, you know, this time 6 months from now. It's a mistake. It's a big mistake. It's funny though, Mike, that you ask what does Jailton have to earn? Because I set up a poll already before the show, ooh, predicting that this question would come. Can Jailton Almeida earn a title shot with a win over Derek Lewis? Four options. Yes, but it has to be dominance. Yes, he's next no matter what. No, he still needs one more win. No, he's not close yet. Most people pretty firmly going with no. No, he still needs one more win, currently leading at 45%. Yes, but it has to be dominant is at 30%. I kind of don't agree with that. I'm probably with the he still needs one more win thing. And as Jose suggested, I have a feeling they're just going to go with Curtis Blaydes rebooking, which is fine, which is still the fight I want to see. It's still the test I think Gelatin has to go through. And I think Curtis's injury is like an ankle thing. I don't know how severe it is. I know it's just something like he hurt it and he kind of aggravated it, but it doesn't sound like something that's going to keep him on the shelf for like a super long time. So hopefully Curtis gets himself right in early 2024 and we can see these guys fight. If Gelatin wins, of course, we can see these guys fight in, I don't know, March, April. I think that'd be really good timing. And then if Gelatin wins that fight, we'll have a better picture of what the hell's going on with the heavyweight title by then. Fingers crossed. And then I think he'll be ready to fight for it.
Jose, as you have seen in the past, you know what is a tough weapon for jiu-jitsu? A heavyweight who doesn't believe in it and does things completely outside the book. And that would be Derek Lewis to a T, a guy who's been taken down many times, muscles his way back to his feet, and then lands those lunch boxes and gets big finishes. So as much as we talk about what Gelatin Almeida could gain here, Derek Lewis, as you said, he's won some and he's lost some of these spots. What if he wins? What if Derek Lewis goes out there, he gets, deals with the Gelatin Almeida three moves of doom, the kick, the takedown, submission attempt, muscles his way back up, and then he lands just a vicious right hand and knocks out Gelatin Almeida, flips this division upside down in a weird kind of a way because Derek Lewis is so over right now. It would just add right into the chaos of 2023. And Derek Lewis is a guy who defies rankings and odds anyways. So like none of this stuff really matters. And everything is in play if Derek Lewis wins this fight. So what happens if Derek Lewis upsets Gelatin Almeida and knocks him out in the first round?
I have no idea. All I know is his next fight will probably be a rematch because he's fought everyone in the top 10. And literally everyone in the top 10, not named Tom Aspinall and Stipe, and I'm not including John Jones because he's the champion and he's hurt. He's never going to fight Stipe. He's never fought Stipe, right? I could be making that up because they've been in the UFC for so long. But he's never fought Tom, and he's never fought Stipe. He's not fighting Stipe next, and Tom is about to fight for the interim title. I don't think Derek Lewis is – I mean, if Tom loses to Sergey, that could be the fight. But outside of that, like, he's already beat Marcin Tybura. He's beaten – I'm trying to even – he's lost to Ty. He's lost to Spivak. He's beaten Volkov. He's beaten Blaydes. He's lost to Cyril. I'm trying to even think of he's obviously beat Marcus Hajiria de Lima. We're gonna give him like Romanov or Martin Boudet. Like it's just not gonna happen. I don't know. Like his next fight's gonna have to be a rematch. Like the Volkov fight would be interesting because Volkov was like what 3 minutes away from winning and securing his own title shot, and then Derek Lewis punched him in the face incredibly hard in the third round. The Spivak fight would be interesting, especially if Spivak loses, because I know there's a lot of people, including our own producer, Casey, who thinks that was a quick stoppage in Dallas. So wouldn't hate to see that fight run back. The Spivak fight, I know Derek Lewis said he came in less than 100%. I don't know if Spivak will take that, considering they had to rebook that again after Derek got sick the first time. Outside of that, I have literally no idea because he's fought it. Like, his next fight's going to have to be a rematch, or if they just bring in like another young heavyweight in the outside of the top. I don't know. The answer is I have absolutely no idea.
Yep, it's crazy, and it could happen, but the betting odds are not suggesting it. AK, your guy Gelatin Almeida, according to DraftKings, the -485 favorite, the comeback on the Black Beast Derek Lewis +370. AK, I think I know where you're going here. Who wins and how? How does this work out?
Yeah, I think the only question is like, when do I think he's going to do it? I'm going classic first rounder. It's not just that I think Gelatin is so good, which I do. Derek Lewis taking this on less than a month's notice. That might be a good thing in this case. Less time to overthink it. He's kind of been. He's always said, he hates like. For example, he hates fighting in Houston, and you would think that he would love fighting in Houston, but he's like, it gets his head. He thinks too much. He's probably the kind of guy who he is best when his back is against the wall. He's not thinking too much. I think that's kind of what happened with the last fight with Rogério de Lima, coming off of, really tough stretch of fights. And he just said, screw it. I'm just going in. I'm throwing whatever I want. Ends the fight in 33 seconds. That could be the situation here too. He's not, he's like, he knows I'm sure his coaches at least told him, he always says he doesn't know anything about his opponents. You might get taken down, do what you can to get back up, get those fists going as soon as you see an opening, right? The game plan is so simple that the lack of time might not matter. But I do think it has to affect you a little bit, especially as you get older. I think it's getting harder for him to do the just get up strategy. We kind of saw that in the Sergey Spivak fight. And I'm not saying Sergey Spivak and Gelson Almeida are, you know, like and like. They're not like the same fighter. But I do feel like if Almeida gets him down, he's not going to be able to just get back up, at least not without taking damage, without Almeida possibly putting him in even more danger. So, yeah, I'm going chalk on this one. On, you know, if you ran it with put through a simulator, I'm sure it would give you this outcome 99 times out of 100. And I'm thinking first round, he takes him down, keeps him there, and gets submission.
Jose, you like to be different here. Are you going to be different and pick Derek Lewis?
Probably if it was full camp, Derek Lewis, but I'm just being realistic. Jairzinho, Gelson does, as I said, three moves of doom very, very well. Derek Lewis has lost to lesser grapplers by submission. I think Gelson will get it done inside five. I think he's going to, you know, front kick, blast, double leg takedown. I don't think he'll get it immediately. I think Derek Lewis will fight it. But if Derek Lewis stuffs that first takedown, game on. If he doesn't, that's a wrap. But I think full camp Jailton beats short notice Derek Lewis in Brazil. That's my prediction.
I'm picking Jailton Almeida as well. Although I think this is going to be really fun. It may not be a fun start. I think Derek Lewis fans are going to watch the first 3.5 minutes of this fight and be like, oh boy, this isn't good. Because the three moves of doom are happening within the first 45 seconds. Derek Lewis is going to be on his back within the first minute of this fight. And he's going to be playing defense. And I think eventually, with like 75 seconds left in round one, Derek Lewis is going to muscle his way back up. And he's going to land a big shot. And Jailton Almeida is going to be on wobbly legs. And Almeida's going to get a little trip takedown and ride out the rest of round one. And we're going to be like, ooh, maybe Derek Lewis got a little bit of momentum. Lewis is going to come out and try to do something crazy at the start of round two. Maybe he tries the flying knee again. Maybe he tries to get Almeida off guard a little bit, and then Almeida is going to get that takedown, and then once that happens, there's just going to be too much time, and I'll say Jailton Almeida mounted ground and pound TKO round two, but in a fun fight. I think Derek, it's gonna be one of those fights, Derek, where we're like, damn, Derek, you brought the thunder and we respect you. But
so just a replay of the Shamil fight
pretty much, but Derek's is gonna have a lot more success than Shamil did.
Yeah, that goes without saying.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was crazy. That was one-way traffic. Anyone who had Jailton Almeida round one on that card, I felt really bad for you.
That's for sure.
Man, because it was so close to many times. Go ahead, AK, please.
I think we have an update on the main card, though. I will say I will still
consider this. Thank God.
I will say, I know, we were all waiting. I will say I don't think this is finalized, but they haven't shuffled it. They just think, yep. They just, but I will say ESPN has removed the Ismael Bonfim Pichel fight and the Marcos Victor Hugo fight. So I don't know if there's a final card, but at least it is updated. It looks like 5-fight main card, 6-fight prelims. But again, it could still get shuffled. I don't think this is final yet, but just to, you know, just so people know.
Yes, UFC just officially announced that those two fights are off. And
there you go.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Don't miss out as the NBA postseason winds down, and new customers to DraftKings can bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
That's it. So a lot of people are wondering, like, why are these fights off? Like, why are they canceled? I wasn't sure about one of them. I do know about the other. The Victor Hugo fight, Daniel Marcos, I basically said, no, I ain't fighting this dude. He didn't try to make the weight, so I'm just not doing it. So screw you. I didn't really know what was happening with the Bonfim-Pichel fight, but Vince Pichel just kind of answered the question on Twitter, responding to something I was tagged in, because somebody tweeted, who decides why fights are canceled based off missing weight? How is C-Rod and Breeden allowed to miss weight by 3+ pounds and still go out there and F my parlays, let Bonfim fight? Vince Pichel replied to this individual, I denied it, you degenerate gambler. He didn't even try to make weight, or he intentionally tried to cheat at home. So now you and him will make nothing. That's what Vince Michel's response was. So there you go. Vince basically said that he chose not to fight him because Bonfim didn't try to make weight, according to him. So there you go. There's the update. We're down to 11 fights, and it is what it is. But the co-main event, we have Nicholas Dalby versus Gabriel Bonfim. Nicholas Dalby, by the numbers, has done very well in Brazil and against Brazilians and against Brazilians in Brazil. Undefeated in all of those things. Has not suffered a loss in either of those fights. The featured bout, gentlemen, the heavyweight bout that we needed to see run back. We needed to see it, and we're going to get it, baby. Rodrigo Nascimento versus Dontel Mays. AKA Mr. Co-main event, Caio Baralho versus Mr. Main Event, Abus Magomedov, early in the main card. And then we get Rodolfo Vieira versus Armin Petrosian, a whole bunch of other fun fights.
What? Hold on, my best friend. Please. Why are we just glossing over? We cannot gloss over the bizarre Nascimento Mays rematch. Why is this? Do you know how I know that this is like so bizarre? If you go to Tapology, it's one of many reasons. If you go to Tapology, usually if you go to one of their belt pages and it's a rematch, they will put the two. They'll put the two next to the fighters' names. They do not have that on Nascimento and Dontel Mays. I'm not calling out Tapology. I'm with Tapology. I think I actually forgot till earlier this week when I was listening to one of our shows and someone said, oh, this is a rematch. And I'm like, what? I like totally forgot. So Tapology, if you're out there, feel free to add that two on. But again, I understand why. Why is this? My best guess, and for anyone trying to remember, they fought, I'm looking at it now, May 2020.
I was there.
Jose was there.
I was one of two reporters on planet Earth sitting cage side for that fight.
Jacksonville. Yeah. This is during.
And it was because I go out for the first fight of every night just to get the lay of the land. And then I go back to do all of the backstage interviews and what have you. So I went out for this fight in an empty arena next to John Morgan, who was still at MMA Junkie at the time. Now he's obviously at the Underground. And we watched this fight. We were like, that was a heavyweight fight. And then we went back to our interviews. I, too, forgot this fight happened. And I was there.
Do you have a theory?
And it was a memorable moment.
Do you have a theory as to why? I'll say my theory after. But you were there. Did something happen that night that you were like, oh,
this probably. I'm going to be realistic and take my answer is going to be very realistic. And it's probably the truth. I think it's no secret Dana White was in the Middle East, and Hezbollah just really wanted this rematch more than anything in the
world. Oh,
Hezbollah. And he was like, Hezbollah, you know, you can book the next fight. He's like, Dontell Mays and Rogério Nascimento. And Dana was like, thank God someone picked this fight because I've been looking for a reason to rebook this one. Now praise Hezbollah. So that's my answer. And that is very clearly the truth.
Wow.
So you don't even have to ask AK why they needed to book it because I just told you why.
My theory is pointless, I guess. I was going to say, so Rodrigo Nascimento has a no contest against Alan Badeau. I could be making that up because I don't remember this fight. That was overturned due to a banned substance. Dontell Mays has no contest against Hamdi Abdelwahab. That was overturned
due to a banned substance. I was actually there.
I feel like
that one actually too.
I wonder if they got confused and just and like they meant to run back one of these no contests and just got confused and got the paperwork confused and they're like, oh, the no contest was from that fight, right? Was from that 2020 fight. Okay, run it back. This is strange. And why is it on the main card? I just don't.
I was at that Hamdi fight too. What in the world? I never remember.
Maybe. Wait. Now we're seeing a pattern. Maybe it's because this is the Jose Young's rematch, heavyweight rematch.
That's true.
It's a combination of all of those things. I think Hezbollah said it. Dana called the matchmakers and they said, okay, these two clearly have never fought because they forgot about it too. And then they booked it. And then they realized it this week that they fought 3 years ago. And now we're getting it again. The rematch of all rematches. Let's see if Dontell Mays can get one back or Mr. Rodrigo Nascimento.
God, I hope this becomes the Nick Lentz, Charles Oliveira trilogy of just like, why are we doing this three times?
Okay. I support.
Okay, now I like this fight so much more. You're selling me so well here.
Because obviously Dontell Mays is going to win, and then like 5 years from now, when Dontell Mays is about to retire, they're like, "What if we run it back one more time?"
Right at the apex, main.
You know,
event.
We never got the Nam Pham Leonard Garcia trilogy. We're going to get this trilogy instead. The ones that people really want. I'm just pulling names out that I don't even think audience members even know who they are.
These are young heavyweights too. Dontell Mays, 31. Rodrigo Nascimento, 30. So you're not crazy that we could see this somewhere down the road. I'm telling you. The trilogy.
We could see this in 2033 for sure. Mm-hmm. Mentioned Braulio Magomedov, Vieira versus Petrosian. We get some fun fights. Yeah, Elvis Brenner's back after his exciting comeback when he takes on Kanan Kruszewski.
I'm very excited.
Okay. Very excited. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I've lost it.
I'm very excited for that. I'm very excited for the Elvis Brenner fight because I was really high on Guram, like very high on Guram. Yeah. Because Guram beat he lost to
Matush Gamrot.
Well, he beat Gamrot and then he lost to who did he just lose to? Ismagulov. He lost to Ismagulov.
Yeah, Demir Ismagulov. Yeah.
And that's like you're fighting monsters like right out of the gate. Guram's obviously a training partner of Hamzat. He's always at his corner. If you, Mike, you were at the Hamzat Gilbert Burns fight and you could hear Guram the entire fight right behind me screaming instructions. I think Guram's a bad dude and he beat the soul out of Elvis for as long as he could. And then I don't know how he did it, but Elvis just clipped him and finished him around three in a fight I don't think gets talked about enough for possible fight or comeback of the year because he looks like he was about to get murdered in there until he finished Guram. I think that's just should be either an honorable mention or very heavily considered for a fight of the year slash comeback of the year. Because again, I think Guram is so talented. So beating a guy like Guram and beating him in the fashion he did is super impressive. He trains with Charles Oliveira, and that camp is like clicking right now. Like they are red hot. So he might not be a world beater. He might not be a future contender. He might not be a top 10 fighter ever, but he's always going to be exciting fights, and I'm very excited for this fight.
AK, what's your low-key under-the-radar fight that has you excited?
I like that one too. I mean, Elvis is referred to by GC Conor Burks as the parlay killer for the reasons that Jose kind of mentioned. Because it was that I was a fight to Kugov before that, right? Like he was a huge underdog, and I think.
Oh my god! I forgot about that fight. I was at that one too. So
he is the spoiler now. I think he's going in as the favorite. I know he was favored. He was supposed to be fighting Esteban Ribovitz instead of Kruszewski. So I think he's still favored, but
-218.
-218. We'll see how it goes. We'll see. Now the shoe's on the other foot for him, but. Man, there's a lot of good sleepers here. Renat Fakhretdinov has not lost a fight in 10 years, and they're giving him a great opponent in Elias Uzelski, so I love that. But if I have to pick one, it shouldn't even be a sleeper. This should be on the main card. Angela Hill, Denise Gomez. This fight is so good. I love this fight. I love this fight. The only thing I hate
is that I like both fighters a lot, and mm-hmm. it's a shame that very likely one of them is going to go home with a loss unless it's a draw, no contest, some weird thing. So because I think Denise Gomez is indicative of like how exciting strawweight is now and sort of has been developing over the last over this past year. Mike, you and I have been saying in a lot of shows, I think we've all been saying, the whole staff, like strawweight is, I think, a top, like in terms of excitement, like consistently good fights. There's not, I know the roster isn't deep, so people are gonna say I'm crazy, but like strawweight fights are challenged, very exciting, back and forth, high skill level. I think it's one of the five best divisions in MMA right now. Not in the top three, obviously. It's not cracking lightweight, bantamweight, featherweight, but it's a really good division. I don't think it gets a lot of credit. So I think Angela Hill, Denise Gomez, awesome fight. Angela Hill winning would not surprise me at all. There's a huge experience gap between her and Denise Gomez. But at the same time, I understand why Denise Gomez is favorite, because she does feel like someone who, as she gets better, is going to develop into a future champion. Even if she loses to Angela Hill, that'd be a huge, big learning experience for her. So I really have eyes on this fight. And I think we'll look back, depending where Denise's career goes, I think we're really going to look back on it as like a really important fight in her career.
Fastest knockout in strawweight history. Denise Gomes single-handedly ruins Yasmin's chances of fighting on Noche UFC. By punching her in the face.
Wow.
Really hard.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Got revenge. Yasmin 2-0 against Brazil. And Denise is like, bet, watch this. 20 seconds.
That was a performance.
She doesn't turn 24.
How many times does, I know Casey's big on the, you know, it matters where you fight on the card. How many prelim strawweight fighters are getting performance of the night bonuses? Denise Gomes, that's who.
She's a bad mamma jamma. I like the fights you all mentioned. The Fakhretdinov, Eliza Zaleski dos Santos fight, all over that one. Really like that one. I think Fakhretdinov is the dude. And I think once he wins, I think I'm going to get an odd no point because they're going to book him with Joaquin Buckley in a big fight. And I'm looking forward to that. We'll see what Joaquin Buckley can do. That'll be his big test to see if he's top 15 guy. The other one, a man who also has a win over the Pleasure Man, a.k.a. Vitor Petrino, taking on Modestus Bukauskas, who on the second go here in the UFC, on a nice little run, parts ways after the kind of violent Khalil Roundtree loss. He goes back to Cage Warriors and wins the light heavyweight title, and he steps in on short notice and beats Tyson Pedro. Then he beats Zach Pauga. Let's see if he can keep this going. See if he can make it five straight wins. See if he can make it 3-0 and stint number two in the UFC. I'm intrigued by that one as well. And there you go. That's UFC Sao Paulo in a nutshell. Well, let's hear from you guys. Let's bring in Casey, the man who missed all things Ngannou Fury. He was on a well-deserved vacation, missed it all. But now he's back for UFC Sao Paulo. What a wonderful world.
What happened? Anything? Just no. Oh,
nope. Nothing happened.
Nope. I'm a good boxer. This guy can't hit. I knocked him out. Yeah.
Nothing happened in the world of anything. The MMA hour went super smooth. There was no heated arguments involved. There was nothing of note to talk about in the last 14 days.
Yeah. Yes. Adelaide got knocked out in the British heavyweight title fight and then almost shoved a referee out of the ring, essentially.
Oh, that was crazy.
And then obviously that was the main event of Riyadh season. And so just that was the end of the card. And Mike and I streamed for 45 minutes.
Yep. And that's about it. And there was no live performances from any of Jose's favorite artists. None of them.
That's true.
Oh, good. So we're done with the whole crossover, you know, MMA boxing thing. That's done. We're done with that.
It was over with the Dylan Danis.
Logan Paul's obviously the best boxer in MMA.
Oh, man. All right. Let's take some peeps questions. We'll take a few. There's not a lot of storylines attached to this card.
Literally, it's zero.
There's zero. Oh, this is a good question. What can Jailton do to impress you on Saturday?
I mean, I'm not unimpressed. I just have questions. Like, I think there's a misnomer of like, if someone isn't 100% on board, it means they dislike the fighter or they're just a hater. I don't dislike Jailton, and I'm not a hater. I just have questions. If Derek Lewis stops the takedown and makes it a fight and Jailton still wins, I would be super impressed. But if he wins, great for him. Like we still have a young champ, a young contender. I have a lot of questions about Jailton, and if he fights through adversity or, you know, yeah, wheel kicks Derek Lewis or something like that, then there you go.
That's actually a good point. So if obviously I'm predicting, you know, first round runs through Derek Lewis, I think what a lot of people are predicting, if he like kind of goes more Mike's way where he, you know, gets a takedown.
For sure.
Okay.
If he survives a Derek Lewis haymaker and still wins. Oh yeah. Great. Because like fighting, I've said this a million times on these shows, being able to fight hurt is such an important part of being. That's what separates contenders and champions and the rest of the division. Like being able to be basically unconscious on your feet and still be able to fight through the pain.
It's a weird thing how like we almost like it's almost I don't know like. It's like, well, he's never been beat. I've never seen him getting beaten up, so I don't know how good he is. But I know what you're saying, though, because
it reminds me of when we were on the red carpet. It was me, Casey, and Esther at the time for the UFC Hall of Fame, and they had all the guest fighters. And Francis was one of the guest fighters. He wasn't obviously champion yet, and I think he had just beaten Kane, but he had like 3 first round knockouts in a row, all under 2 minutes or something like that, maybe even under a minute. And I was like, people who still have questions about like you're like fighting through adversity and this and that, like, what do you think you need to do to like show them this? He goes, what else do you want me to do? Like, what do you want me to do? Not knock them out in 60 seconds? He was like so confused by my question. He's like, yeah, all right, I'll just knock them out in 4 minutes. Then, rather than 1 minute. Like, it was very funny. He made me look like a fool, but he like understood the question, but he also just didn't know how to answer. Like, how do you answer that? Like, you're winning by 30 seconds and people have questions. Like, I don't, what do you want me to do? Not do that? It's like when Francis knocked out Jairzinho in like that just disgusting flurry of punches. If you watch that in slow motion, like Jairzinho did everything right until he just got touched. And I was talking with Eric Nixon at the airport. We're flying home, and he was showing us videos of them like warming up, and they had like a game plan of like, you know, front kicks and high kicks and all the stuff. And then he's like, "What do you do? What do you do? Why game plan when you can just touch a man and turn him off?"
Yeah. I'm interested to see how we'll have to see if it gets there, but how Almeida can fight when his gas tank is say below 50%. That's what I'm ready. He doesn't necessarily get beaten up because we know Derek Lewis is one of the best fighters when he's tired. When both gentlemen are tired in there, Derek Lewis is probably maybe the most dangerous, like running on empty type of fighter out there. I'm interested to see how Almeida does when he doesn't have a full gas tank. So, but Lewis has to get him there. So we'll see.
Do you guys know how many times Jailton Almeida has gone to a decision in his career?
Zero.
One.
I'm looking.
I had to look it up. One. And he lost. He actually, but it's a long time ago. I'm sure this was 5 years ago. So, I mean, who knows? Probably doesn't mean anything. But he did lose his lone decision. He, you know, Shamil kind of took him a little bit in the second round. But yes, otherwise, gas tank, pretty untested. Pretty untested at this level.
Yeah. I'm assuming he has 205 too.
I'll have to check. I can check right now.
Shamil is also like a more than capable grappler. Like, I think he has an ADC heavyweight thing or whatever that means. Like, I don't think it's the ADC heavyweight champions, but it's like an offshoot of ADCC. So like he is a more than capable grappler. So I bet I don't even like if you rewatch that, it just seems like he survived until he just couldn't. It's not like it was a back and forth fight. I think he was just defending and Jailton just kept working for it until he got it.
Yeah, and he's a big heavyweight. He's like 263.
He's a bag of soup.
Freaking guy. Yeah, he's a big bag of soup. I'll get to you in a second, AK. Jailton Almeida has been punched a total of 2 times in 5 UFC fights. He has outlanded his opponents 114-2, and he has 3 shutouts, including against Paco Porter and Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Didn't get punched once. Shamil Abdurakhimov hit him once, and the only other punch he took was from the pleasure man.
And he survived?
And he died. And he survived it.
He probably enjoyed it.
Calm down.
Casey, if you wanted to know.
We're going to lose our monetization.
Casey, keep going. You wanted to know what weight class his one decision loss is actually, it was, according to Topology, at 185. So this literally means nothing.
180? He used to be a middleweight?
I mean, this is a lot. This is 5 years ago.
So. But he used to be a middleweight? Are you serious?
I mean, apparently at some point.
I guess every heavyweight was a middleweight at some point when they
were a baby. Yeah, when they were a baby. Yeah.
I assume when he was born, he weighed about 205.
No. Yes. No, apparently a lot of his early fights, 185. So really, this tells us nothing.
Alex Volkanovski was 700 pounds at one point. Yeah. And then
became a heavyweight. I heard about that.
Find a photo of this man at 85 pounds. I don't
believe it. Oh, my God. All right. Let me see.
Okay.
We'll move on. I'll slack you.
This is the silliest preview show ever. I love it. Could we live in a world where Derek Lewis gets the winner of Aspinall versus Pavlovich in 2024? So this is a question we brought up on BTL yesterday, okay? And you feel like there is a world where this could happen. And I also feel like a world this could happen. Not all – I mean, it would have to be a perfect storm of things happening. But – Jose, it's a weird time in the UFC. Meritocracy doesn't really mean a whole hell of a lot. Let's just say, let's paint this picture, Jose. Let's say Tom Aspinall wins next Saturday. And let's just say, and nothing's set in stone, there's no insight on this whatsoever. Let's say Jones Stipe set for July. And let's say April or so, the UFC goes back to London and they need a main event. Tom Aspinall needs an opponent. Is there a world where if Derek Lewis wins this fight, they would do Tom Aspinall versus Derek Lewis in the main event as an interim heavyweight title defense, just to put some extra butts in seats and maybe a couple of extra pay-per-view buys because people freaking love Derek Lewis.
No.
No. Okay. No.
I don't think he's going to go to Manchester to fight Tom Aspinall. I don't. I really don't. I think they'll probably make that the Cyril Gane fight. I think if Derek Lewis, you know, wins this and then one more, maybe, but I don't think he's leapfrogging into the, because Volkov just had that big win over Ty. Like, I think there are other matches that they would try to match up. I know Tom beat Volkov, but I think there's other matches they would make those for those two right away. If that makes sense. Okay. I don't think so. The crazier things have happened. And like you said, Derek Lewis is incredibly popular. He seems to be one of those guys that you could take him anywhere in the world and he'll get cheered. I know there will be some boos just because he's fighting the hometown guy, but people like him. But I don't see him fighting the winner, especially if it's – I don't think so. If Tom loses, then I think he'll fight Tom.
Yeah. I honestly, I think this is the only way this happens. Like, if it all plays out exactly like that. It's in Manchester. Aspinall needs somebody to fight. He needs to be the main event. And Derek Lewis is, like, the only guy available. Like, they would do it. Other than that, I don't see it happening. But that's – if Pavlovich wins, we're not seeing it. If Aspinall is to defend in, like, I don't know, Sacramento, no, it's not going to happen. Has to happen in Manchester, and has to happen, like, at the perfect time.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's down to clown, it's Derek Lewis, so. But again, I think it'll be, like, a means to an end.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, man. I mean, Next question.
I have a question. Go ahead. Uh-huh. You first.
Well, my question is just to people in general is if you don't like Parker Porter, I want to know why. That's my question.
I don't think it's so much as if we don't like him. It's more of like a why.
Dude's a hard worker.
Blue skies.
What if his name was George Sullivan?
A Parker Porter by any other name would smell just as sweet, as they say.
Wasn't there a George Sullivan in the UFC?
That's exactly why I'm saying it. And you don't even remember. You had to ask about it.
See?
That's what I'm saying.
We don't have to ask about Parker Porter.
What if his name was George Carmichael? Like, that's actually kind of a sick name, but.
Cage Warriors champion name right there, if there ever was one.
Yeah,
Parker's
exactly.
Just a good dude. He's a good dude.
I want to reiterate, it is not anything to do with dislike. It's more of like a why. Like, why? Yeah.
It's just, I mean, I've always had a soft spot for Parker. Ever since I saw him fight John Jones in Wilmington, Massachusetts.
But like, I get that.
Since, a guy who like retired and then just randomly was like, you know what, I'm gonna come back and like fill in for this reality fighting heavyweight title fight that they need a guy in. And that eventually led him to make it to the freaking UFC. Like, it's just crazy. It's an improbable story. And then just to see the personality shine and to see some of the performances, him losing a bunch of weight and looking real good and getting a quick finish. Like, just how could you not like the guy? And go on a roof for him. He's a character.
It's easy to go, oh, John Jones is my favorite fighter. GSC's my favorite fighter. But Parker Porter is MMA. Like, this, like, 99% of what MMA is guys like Parker Porter. Guys like just trying to just, I'm just going to do it. I may not be the best in the world, but I'm just going to go out and do it and fight my heart out. And you're going to love me. Just because, and then you get that feeling. And it's fun to say his name.
Yeah, he made it to the UFC. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah. I love it.
Parker Porter. Let's go.
Parker Porter.
I have to see if he wants to jump on the watch party next week. Good reminder.
It's still perplexing to me. Because it's still absolutely perplexing to me.
What undefeated fighter loses this weekend?
How many that is in the card?
Let's pull it up.
There's only four, and I guess also it just means people who are undefeated in the UFC or are just undefeated.
Yeah, let's go both.
So Gabriel Bonfim, Vitor Petrino, Eduardo Mara, and that's it, right? Is there another one?
Say him again. Dan Marcos fight's not happening. That's right. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was going to say Dan Marcos fight.
Gabriel Bonfim. Marcos is off the card. Vitor Petrino and Eduardo Moura are the three undefeated fighters. Does any one of them lose?
Gabriel Bonfim.
Because
Nicholas Dalby is undefeated in Brazil.
And if you want to back Jose. You thought the main event odds were wide. This is even wider. Gabriel Bonfim, a -625 favorite. The comeback on maybe the real Brazilian beast, the Brazilian killer in a lot of respects. Nicholas Dalby, +455. So take that information however you want.
What do you think? Like this matchup too because Gabriel Bonfim is hyper talented. And I like every fight is just like a notch above the previous opponent. If that makes sense. Like he's not going to skyrocket. Like this is like, all right, he beat this guy, but I have questions. And then he gets an opponent. Like, I don't remember who he beat in the contender series, but I know his debut was against Manir Lazez. I'm not high on Manir Lazez at all. And he like whooped him. And then I think Trevin Giles is a very good test for prospects and he whooped him. Nicholas Dalby is also a very good test for prospects. And if he whoops Nicholas Dalby, then it's a fun fight. It's a fun fight.
Yeah, I like it. AK, you think any undefeated fighter loses this weekend?
I think Vitor Petrino, I like him, but I like Modestus Bukauskas too. I'm somewhat surprised Vitor is such a heavy favorite. Then again, I admit I haven't been keeping tabs on the Vitor Petrino hype as much as I should be. So if he is this blue chip light heavyweight, then I apologize again. I need to educate myself a bit, but I think Modestus Bukauskas is a very live dog, so I totally understand the Dalby Brazil killer angle, but I would put the Bukauskas upset actually a little bit higher than that in terms of likelihood.
Wait, Renat's fighting on the prelims? Oh man, that's so stupid. He should be on the main card.
Yeah,
Nascimento Mays too. God. Nascimento Mays too.
I'm like looking at the prelims now just to like refresh it, and I had zero clue he was fighting Easy DS. That is such a good fight. That is such a fun fight. Renat is a bad dude.
Outside of the main event, that's the most interesting fight on the card
for me. 100%.
Yeah. That was my next topic. We haven't got too many questions about Renat, but like I wanted to talk about him more, honestly.
Is it Renat or Renat?
I think
it's not Brazilian.
In Brazil, it's Hanat.
Yeah.
So this weekend,
way to be on theme, Casey. You're right. Yeah.
Could he be the breakout star of this card? If he
could, He really could.
Like kind of that guy, like, oh, we're going to be hearing his name a lot if he wins big tomorrow.
I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be really tough to matchmake for. Like, who wants to fight that guy?
Barabish?
I think aside from Denise Gomez, and again, I mean, strawweight is not as deep a division. I think Fakhretdinov would have the most to gain from a win here. Just sort of look at my own internal rankings. Like, I don't have Fakhretdinov super high. I probably should have him higher. I guess just because besides Kevin Lee, he beat who are his other two wins?
Brian Battle, which is aged very well.
Good win. Yeah, yeah.
And Andreas Mikulaitis.
Okay. But he beat Eric Spicely to get into the UFC.
In less than a minute.
Eric Spicely was never a world beater, but he's a tough guy.
I probably just don't have Renat high enough. That's probably why this would be such a big jump for me. Because I have, Zaleski somewhere in the top 25 firmly. So this would jump him into the top 25. But some people might have Renat there already. So, maybe it's not as big a jump as I'm thinking.
I love this fight. It's a great fight.
Well, we have questions, but nothing really about this card. I think we can – all these other questions we can answer tomorrow, I think.
People Street
Fight. Q&A, yeah. But
when that's going to start now because we lost two fights. Yeah. So whenever we thought we were going to start it, it might actually start a little bit later. I don't know if we have an update on that, but we will let you know.
No change to the times on ESPN's schedule page. Still says 6 and 9, but wouldn't surprise me if it got bumped to like 6:30 start time. But we'll see. It says 6 Eastern time for now.
Well, either way, we will be here for you to answer all of those questions and much more. So thank you all for watching the UFC Sao Paulo preview show. We had a silly little time, and this card will be interesting. It'll be the final card before we hop on over to MSG in New York City for UFC 295, the two title fights. It's going to be a big next 8 days for the heavyweight division. I'm very much looking forward to see how it all plays out. So for Casey on the ones and twos, for AK, for Jose, I am Mike Heck. Thank you for watching. We will see you tomorrow, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The NBA playoffs are heating up, and so is the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. DraftKings brings you same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. You can download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VOXMMA. That's code VOXMMA for new customers to get 150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.